Recession and inflation are here. Gas, housing, and everyday goods are up, way up. And you want to be ready for any situation. So what would you do if there's no food on the shelf? Arc Heirloom Seeds are here to help. Did you know 99% of seeds sold today can't reproduce? With heirloom seeds, you only have to plant once. Then you can grow year after year, giving you and your family stability and security because things are getting crazy out there. Our all-in-one seed kit provides everything you need to grow your own food. This premium seed kit has over 65 varieties, 50,000 seeds in stores for 15 years. You'll also get our exclusive seed guide to make growing a no-brainer. Arc Seed Kits is a family-owned and operated business and the most trusted name in the nation for over 15 years. Our mandate is to get heirloom seeds into every home in America. Go to arcseedkits.com today and get free shipping by entering promo code podcast. That's arkseedkits.com. Promo code podcast. Get your seeds, get prepared, get growing. arcseedkits.com.
Make sure to go to timcast.com, click join us, and become a member to support this podcast and all the work we do, and you'll get access to exclusive uncensored segments from Timcast IRL and way more. Now, let's jump into the first story.
The president of Harvard has finally resigned, and not because she defended very extremist statements from far-left extremists, but because finally, after I think like 50 plus accusations of plagiarism, she had no choice. Now, I think what we're seeing here is not acceptance that she did something wrong, but it's recognition that the woke pushed too far and we're experiencing too much collateral damage. But it's a good sign. Wokeness is on the way out. It's a fact. It's a reality. From the Bud Light boycott, Target boycott, and now the resignations of more than one university president. We are seeing academics, real academics, people like, individuals on social media who actually want to uphold the values of meritocracy, celebrating the reclamation of standards in universities. Now, for the longest time, there's been a debate. Many people have argued with me that the universities are the cause of the rise of wokeness. That is not correct. They are a massive component. They are the physical world hub. But the main component, I believe, is actually social media, which is why we see the rise of wokeness at the exact same time in every single country. Now, I know, they're going to say, not every single country. What I mean is, most countries experienced a spike in their media in terms like white privilege, racism, diversity, etc. And the reality was, social media algorithms, a combination of two things. One, first, these companies were heavily incentivized monetarily because rage bait makes money. And the public popular narrative is racism bad. Yeah, we all agree on that. And so when you make a video or an article about something racist and say, ooh, I'm so angry about it, well, sure enough, you get clicks. But sure enough, then the monetary incentive is there. Sure enough, then you build a massive base of people seeking out any kind of injustice to pile on. Then people start targeting these companies saying, you need to do something about this. Then the companies start changing their rules. And then we get the expansion of affirmative action, diversity hires, etc. What we are seeing now with the resignation of Harvard's president is absolutely incredible. It shows you just how deep the rot has gone. There's an article from the Associated Press titled, Harvard president's resignation highlights new conservative weapon against colleges, plagiarism. Let me just pause real quick. Plagiarism has always been a serious academic no-no. Plagiarism in media, a serious academic no-no. Let me clarify something for you. Plagiarism isn't just copy and pasting someone else's work. If you take a substantive portion of someone's writing and like alter a word here or there, you're still plagiarizing. You can condense the ideas down in your own words, but it's fairly obvious when the structure of the paragraph, minus the adjectives, follows the exact same pattern. Meaning, all you did was copy and paste someone else's work. It's a big no-no. In fact, in journalism, it's copyright infringement. But this is what the Associated Press writes. The new conservative weapon against colleges. In fact, in the article, one of the funniest things I've ever read, they go on to say that scalping is actually do they have the scalping? Yeah, they said scalping was a gruesome practice by white people targeting Native Americans. Holy crap, you gotta be kidding me. Several hundred academics signed letters defending Dr. Gay, that's her name, at Harvard, despite the fact we know she has no merit. She has done nothing to warrant this position. And now we've got posts from many of these progressives saying you couldn't even keep a black woman president for a year, blah, blah, blah. It's one of the shortest 10 years in history at the university. The reality is this. Woke is a cult, and this proves it. Please do us all the favor and share this story. You can share this video. That helps. Helps the work we do here at timcast.com. Share this article and what I'm about to show you. Go to your friends and family members who pretend to be woke or are scared to speak up and say, take a look at this and justify it. A new weapon against colleges? Plagiarism? It's against the rules. It's an academic violation. You see, woke people were trying to fly under the radar. We knew this, those that were paying attention, that they were lying, cheating, and stealing. And now that she's gotten caught in their panic, it's the best they could do. But you need to understand this, my friends. What I am showing you here is not just to say that the universities are bad. This is to show you the press is bad. Now, there are many mainstream publications that called out Harvard's president's plagiarism, accusations of, for which there are numerous dozens of examples. Bravo to them. And there are still many outlets that are attacking those who exposed this malfeasance. The AP, for instance. This is not news. But, you know, according to NewsGuard, the Associated Press is cream of the crop, best of the best. They got a 95 out of 100. Man, they must be really good. I think the only reason they don't get it is some technicality. They don't get 100. Let me show you this story, and then we'll show you the breakdown. What I want you all to understand with this takeaway is, though it may be dark in the days ahead, we are winning. Those who believe in American values, those who believe in this country's founding principles, the good ones, not the bad ones, who seek to uphold meritocracy, individual responsibility, personal accountability, we're winning. Thank you. Finally. You know, it really bums me out that we even got to this point, but there are too many cowards in this country. But you know what? That's a reality of life. There are many cowards. I want to give a shout out to Dave Chappelle, certainly a man who is not a coward. After he was attacked ruthlessly and relentlessly by far left extremists over his jokes, you know what he does? He opens his new comedy special with this. It is a masterpiece. I'm sorry. His opening story about Andy Kaufman and Jim Carrey is one of the greatest comedic bits ever done. This 7-minute long story that ends with a punchline of a single sentence. Masterfully done. I know. A lot of jokes have simple punchlines. But the turnaround is so masterful. Dave Chappelle, the greatest of all time. Dave Chappelle standing up to a DC liberal crowd and saying this joke about Andy Kaufman, Jim Carrey, and how he feels around trans people to thunderous applause in the audience. It's a signal. Dave Chappelle gave a signal to the average person. It's okay to laugh at absurdity. And now, for all these people that are scared to speak up or who knew what they were advocating for is wrong, y'all are in deep, deep trouble. Not every single person who was scared to speak up. Many of these people will now start saying, okay, it's safe. I can come out. Sad, but at least these people are now going to start speaking up. But there are many people like, you know, Sam Harris, for instance, who we know, he knows he's on the wrong side of this. But he was scared. And he thought he was on the right side of history by defending the cult. And now here he is, frantic and panicked, attacking Elon Musk. And he's on no one's side. No one likes him now. He thought as the die was rolling, it was going to come out for the woke. And then what happened? They rolled a 7. We win. Depending on where you are on the point, somebody was going to roll. 7 could be good or bad. But my point is this. So they threw the dice and Sam Harris went, I'm going to double down on woke crap and psychotic garbage. And we all called him out. Why? Because we are men of principle. We are and ladies, of course. And here we are. Let me show you some of these examples and let's talk about the great victory that we see today at the beginning of 2024. It may be that as we enter this year, it will be tumultuous. There may be conflict, crisis, but it also may be the sad reality for the woke they've lost. It may be, I'm going to say it, we do not see escalation of this conflict. It may be that before it gets to that darkness, enough people turn things around. Joe Biden is unceremoniously the loser in the 2024 election. Donald Trump wins, and we avert the worst case scenario. Then Trump wins, comes in, cleans up the corruption. It may be that this is just a dark time that we walk peacefully through, and I hope so. Here's the story from the AP. Harvard's president's resignation highlights new conservative weapon against colleges, plagiarism. Uh-huh. I love it. The downfall of Harvard's president has elevated the threat of unearthing plagiarism, a cardinal sin in academia, and a possible new weapon in conservative attacks on higher education. You mean to tell me the AP is saying there are many instances of plagiarism uncovered? It should be their job as journalists to expose malfeasance. You know, the old saying was, journalists should comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. But not when it comes to their political allies, I suppose. Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/timpool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or call them at 877-646-5347. Again, that's 877-646-5347. Claudine Gay's resignation Tuesday followed weeks of mounting accusations that she lifted language from other scholars in her doctoral dissertation and journal articles. The allegations surfaced amid backlash over her congressional testimony. The plagiarism allegations came not from her academic peers, but from her political foes, led by conservatives who sought to oust Gay. Yes, but some of these are academic personalities. Here's the issue. When you get prominent academic personalities who are opposed to wokeness, they say you're not her academic peer. Why? Because you have to be in the cult to be a peer. If you're an academic personality, a professor, or someone who works in the university system, like, I mean, Dr. James Lindsay, for instance, they'll say, you're a conservative. It's political. James Lindsay doesn't like conservatives. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Because they are a cult, but they're losing. I love this. They say her detractors charged that Gay, who has a PhD in government, was a professor at Harvard and Stanford and headed Harvard's largest division before being promoted, got the top job in large part because she is a black woman. That is a fact. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. It's kind of wild that they're like, that's not why it happened. What do you mean? Like that's diversity played a huge role in the hiring of not just her, but many other individuals. These individuals, these academics have been saying this explicitly. They wanted people of color and women, et cetera, et cetera. So of course that was the reason. I love this. You ready for this? Christopher Rufo, a conservative activist who helped orchestrate the effort, celebrated her departure as a win in his campaign against elite institutions of higher education. On X, he wrote, scalped, as if Gay was a trophy of violence, invoking a gruesome practice taken up by white colonists who sought to eradicate Native Americans. Dude, anybody with a cursory understanding of history knows that scalping was not a gruesome practice of white colonists seeking to eradicate Native Americans. Now, of course, I believe it's fair to say. There are many individuals who probably and wrongly believe that scalping is a unique thing among Native Americans. No, I don't think, I believe there's probably a lot of people who think Native Americans predominantly did the scalping. Yo, scalping is a standard act of war that's been around for thousands of years, and it's irrespective of culture or race. Why? There were Vikings, Nordics, who scalped. And before the colonists ever arrived, there was a mass scalping grave taken upon by Native Americans. We know that Native Americans engaged in scalping. A lot of people did. It was a gruesome act meant to terrify. Let me see if I can pull this up. Do I have this Britannica here? Ah, yes. Scalping, a rite of warfare, removal of part of the scalp with hair attached from the enemy's head. Ooh. It indicates that many cultures have engaged in the removal of body parts of their enemies. Most frequently, they're used as trophies or proofs of valor, blah, 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 blah. They go to mention that Herodotus, the Greek, and Scythian warriors were required to deliver enemy scalps. Oh, was that an attack on Native Americans? In the 14th century, archaeological evidence was found that in the 14th century, a mass grave containing nearly 500 victims, with some with evidence of scalping, was found near Crow Creek, South Dakota. The conflict that killed these individuals is thought to have been precipitated by a prolonged drought. Do you understand what that means, my friends? Yeah, the 13th century, white European colonists had not yet arrived. I suppose you could argue that Leif Erikson made it to Newfoundland, but it's not like they expanded westward. It wasn't until we famously talk about Christopher Columbus arriving in the Bahamas, followed by the period of European colonization, which was the end of the 15th century. The 14th century, so we're talking potentially, I think it's fair to say, over 100 years before. But you see what the AP does. Ah, it's wonderful to see the woke fail. Here we go. The AP, they removed the committee notes in real time. Did you just see that disappear? Harvard president's resignation highlights a new conservative weapon against colleges, plagiarism. You know what's wild about this? The Babylon Bee could have written this exact headline as a satire article. Seriously. Because plagiarism is something wrong. And look how they write it. Let's take a walk through commentary. Chris Rufus says, the funniest outcome of the Claudine Gay saga is all of the academics coming out in defense of plagiarism and all of the journalists coming out against journalism, dutiful to the regime until the bitter end. I know it, Chris. When 2017, I wonder how this happens. I really, really, really do. I worked for Vice in 2013 into 2014. I ended up leaving and joined a company called Fusion. And for Fusion, I did field reporting on a bunch of stories. It was an interesting time, to say the least. And somehow, I escaped these institutions without becoming woke. What ends up happening is, after I leave Fusion, within a few months, I think, you know, Donald Trump says, did you see what they said happened last night in Sweden? And all of a sudden, all these people were like, what happened last night in Sweden? Nothing happened last night in Sweden. Well, what Trump was referring to was, last night on Fox News, they played a segment about Sweden and the high crime. Trump was correct. But they all said nothing happened last night. And so all of a sudden, this big conversation erupted on social media between conservatives and the woke. And they were talking about the high crime rate in Sweden. Paul Joseph Watson said, I'll pay $2,000 to any journalist who spends a weekend in Sweden. And so I DM'd him. I was like, I'll do it. And he was like, to be honest, bro, I was taking the piss, but sure, okay, why not? He donates $2,000 to my GoFundMe, raising money to go and do this reporting from Sweden. I got DMs from my former colleagues at Vice News, people I had thought were my friends who I had done field reporting with. And they said, don't go. I was like, what do you mean, don't go? Yeah, don't. Trump's a liar. And I was like, great, I'll prove he lied. That's the point. And they're like, no, don't go. Multiple individuals from Vice contacted me telling me not to do the journalism. And I'm just like, I don't understand, man. You think Trump's lying? I'm going to go prove it. And it's not about whether Trump was lying. It was about whether these reports were true. And I mostly came back with a moderate centrist take that crime was rising, but it's nowhere near as bad as a lot of people thought it was, but it was going up. I even had the Huffington Post write a fairly good piece about my coverage. But this is where it was all just picking up. This was 2016 into 2017. Wokeness was on the rise, and it really got big around 2020. I think that's the peak. But it was wild for me to have these journalists tell me not to do journalism. And I'm like, guys, I went with this guy to Ukraine. I'm like, dude, I went with you guys to these countries to document these things. Why would I all of a sudden stop doing it? Crazy. I couldn't imagine what it would have been like if I stayed at Vice. And I was like, whoa, you see this big story about Sweden? We should go and cover it. No, you shouldn't go. What do you mean? I went to Thailand. I went to Turkey. I went to Brazil. I went to Morocco. I went to all these places. No, don't do it. I would have probably quit on the spot. You know what's fascinating is when Ferguson happened, I said, we've got to get down there and cover this. This is huge. I mean, the Michael Brown riots were huge. And they told me, wait, we'll see. So you know what I did? I bought my own plane ticket and I went down there. I went down there with Casey Neistat. Boy, was Vice pissed. What are you doing? And I was like, you know what I told him? I was like, guys, you will not hold me back. I'm going to do the reporting. And they did not want me to go. And this actually was the end of my time at Vice. Because I got to tell you, man, the finale of what happened with my tenure at Vice, I don't know if tenure is the right word. The finale was them saying, come back. The reporting is done. And there was a conflict between me and some other reporters. And I said, so be it. They said, we don't want to deal with you guys bickering and fighting. So just come. And I said, whatever, I'm done with this. Y'all have been a thorn in my side. Let me tell you my mentality, the way I view things. I do not hold this view of being subordinate and working for someone else. I just don't. I hold this view of an exchange, a mutual exchange or a deal between parties. I went to Vice and I said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do a culture war on entrepreneurship because I really want to talk about business and mentality. But I told them, look, here's what I need. Can you guys provide me this? Because if you provide me this, I'll give you something you need. Trade. You know, if I make bread and a guy comes to my house and says he'll give me money for the bread, I don't work for him. I say, buddy, I can kick you out at any point. But there are many people who have the mentality that their subordinate must just do what they're told. Nah, you ain't got no leverage over me. I went to Vice and I said, look, guys, here's what I'm looking for. I need these three things. If you give me this, I'll bring this coverage and this press. It will help benefit Vice. And they said, deal. When I wasn't getting what I wanted, I had a meeting. I said, guys, you have yet to deliver on these things. And we'll get it for you. We'll get it for you. Give me more money. Three times. And then a third time I said, you're fired. Our arrangement is done. I don't need you. And boy, were they shocked when at the last minute I jumped ship and then went somewhere else. But that's the point, man. Journalists who don't want you to do journalism. It was the beginning. And I saw the signs, and I've mentioned this. It looked like this is what was coming. Same thing was true with Fusion. I thought at least there I'd have different contractual guarantees and I had my own budget, but it is what it is. Christina Buttons tweets, former Harvard president Claudine Gay has been accused of over 50 instances of plagiarism throughout her career, some of which have been confirmed by left-leaning sources. Despite this, progressives have flooded X with posts gaslighting the public by suggesting her resignation is due to racism, white supremacy, anti-blackness. This is how critical social justice activists sustain their ideology and enforce universal adoption of DEI. Take a look at these posts. These are hilarious. Who cares? Well, if they got what they wanted from their well-executed plan, says Ida Bay Wells, thinking of her and her black academics placed in impossible positions, the next president of the university must be a black woman, says Mark Lamont Hill. These people are psychotic. And they're evil.
You're cruising down the highway. Windows rolled down. Tunes blasting from the radio. You're in the zone and living the dream. Suddenly, your car sputters, coughs, and throws a wrench in your whole day. Tow trucks, repair bills, the dream turns into a nightmare. Don't wait until car trouble steals your peace of mind. Visit CarShield now at carshield.com/Carlson. For nearly 20 years, CarShield has helped millions of drivers avoid the stress of major repairs. They offer plans covering up to 5,000 parts and systems, from your engine and transmission to electronics and more, all for a low monthly rate that fits your budget. CarShield plans also include unlimited miles, 24/7 roadside assistance, and rental options. Get peace of mind now. Visit CarShield online at carshield.com/Carlson Join millions of customers and contact CarShield now to save 20%. Visit carshield.com/Carlson. That's carshield.com/Carlson. Visit now.
Here's one. Rage at what these racists did to Claudine Gay. Couldn't even keep a black woman as president for 1 year without harassing and stalking her out. They have the most unbelievable, horrific white men at the highest levels of leadership, but black women, of course not. Uh-huh. Rufo said, please show me a white male university president who plagiarized 40 plus passages across 7 papers and kept his job. I'll wait. It's really amazing where we are, isn't it? In a resignation letter, Claudine Gay, disgraced former president of Harvard, blamed racism. I would expect nothing less from a diversity hire. DEI is poison. It must be eradicated from our institutions. It is. Well, here you go. Part of what she wrote. It is a singular honor to be a member of this university, which has been my home and my inspiration for most of my professional career. My deep sense of connection to Harvard and its people has made it all the more painful to witness the tensions and divisions that have risen, that have riven our community in recent months, weakening the bonds of trust and reciprocity that should be sources of strength and support, blah, blah, blah. Amidst all of this, it has been distressing to have doubt cast on my commitments to confronting hate and upholding scholarly rigor. Two bedrock values that are fundamental to who I am, and frightening to be subjected to personal attacks and threats fueled by racial animus. It's the only thing they have. The only thing they have to say is, yeah, but you're racist. Nobody cares anymore. You have beaten that horse to death and then beaten the dead horse into a fine paste to the point where nobody even knows what you're beating. It's funny. It's like, hey, you're beating a dead horse. Now there's just a pile of mush on the ground and you're like, honestly, I have no idea what you're doing. Yeah, you're fired. That's where we are. They were calling. This is really funny. They tried to get her to resign and she was refusing. That's the crazy thing. Larry Elder. Larry Elder steps up to the plate to point out the hypocrisy, the lies, and the cult. Please share this stuff. It has been distressing and frightening to be subjected to personal racial animus, she says. Larry Elder says, is being called the black face of white supremacy an example of personal attacks fueled by a racial animus? Asking for a friend. They have these posts where they're like, they're trying to take black people from positions of power. When Larry Elder was running for governor and was favored heavily by conservatives, the left attacked him on racial grounds. Racist, vile attacks against him. The funny thing is, they say all these people want to take black people from people of power. The conservative view of the Supreme Court, the ideal version, is just 9 Clarence Thomases. That's the meme. It's like left accuses conservatives of racism, conservatives dream, and it's the Supreme Court is all just Clarence Thomas. Conservatives don't care that Clarence Thomas is a black man. They care that he's a good man. It's fascinating, isn't it? Clarence Thomas is based, he's intelligent, he's smart, and I don't care what his race is. The left does. They hate him for it because they are racists. It's funny as we look to the future and we fear the potential looming civil war. And I think to myself, it's kind of funny that it's Democrats once again fomenting conflict and chaos through corrupt activities and racist ideology. But now they're saying, yeah, but that wasn't real Democrats. I'm not kidding. When you look back at the Confederates, the Democrats, and you rightly point out that they had much the same ideology of racial separation, the Democrats go, no, the party switched. Those weren't real Democrats. It's like no matter what they do wrong, that wasn't real communism. We get it, dude. But we're not falling for it anymore. That doesn't mean, you know, there's a lot of conservatives that are equally embracing ideological positions. We'll see what happens in 2024. It'll be an interesting time. Chris Ruffer points out this post from Ibram Kendi. Kendi says, racist mobs won't stop until they topple all black people from positions of power and influence who are not reinforcing the structure of racism. Ah, there it is. It's an important qualifier. Because when we cheer for Clarence Thomas or Larry Elder, or Dave Chappelle, they say, yeah, but they're upholding racism. You know, to be fair, Dave Chappelle made a joke about Asians. He said that his wife's Asian and he was trying to open her phone, but he couldn't figure out the password. And when he realized it had facial recognition, he just went, "Oh!" It's like a Seamus joke. No, it's like a Dave Chappelle joke, and Seamus is emulating Dave Chappelle. Sorry, Seamus. And he's like, and it opened right away. See, I am part Asian. And so I love it. I love it. I thought it was a fascinating joke. I thought it was hilarious. Not only am I Asian, but as many of you know, as a mixed race Asian person, I have no community. I have no Asian community or white community. I just have America. And so there's many people on the left. Oh, they try to avoid the subject. Tim Pool, they say he's a right wing commentator. They don't want to talk about the fact that I come from a family, second generation mixed race that fought for civil rights. How about that? And people on the right will make the joke when I bring it up. But I want you all to understand the importance. And I, you know, for all the memes, I really don't bring it up all that often, but it's important to point out my family fought through civil rights and for civil rights. And as someone who has no racial community, I actually had white nationalists literally say this. It's like 6 years ago. They said Tim Pool's ideology can be explained simply by the fact that he has no racial community. And I'm like, yes, yeah, I agree. Because they were saying that they have white collectivism and they understand white collectivism. And I don't. And I'm like, yes, you are correct. There is no place I go except the American community. And that's why I love this country and its values. And that's why we must defend it. Because when I look to the right, what do I see? I see a bunch of conservatives and they're like, man, I sure do love that Clarence Thomas. He's got amazing ideas. And I'm like, you know, they really don't care that he's a black man. And that feels safe. That makes me feel good. I look to the left and they're complaining about race, demanding racial segregation. And I'm like, I tell you this, my friends, I know what happens to me if I go to the left because I've been there. They attack me for my race. They reignite the conflicts of civil rights and slavery on purpose to cause pain and attack my values because they're racists. I saw it at Occupy Wall Street. And I know what happens when I go to the right. They say, Tim, your idea is stupid. And I laugh and I go, maybe. But they don't tell me anything about my race as an issue. I can have all the most I can have Matt Walsh go on his show and say, I think Tim Pool is wrong about what he said about Bud Light. And you know what Matt Walsh doesn't do? Tim Pool's Asian. And I'm like, okay. I can appreciate you telling me my ideas are bad. Absolutely, because that's what I hope you do. And I can appreciate you telling me my ideas are good because I more so hope you do that. But you and I, we all know what the left would do. They don't care about your ideas. They don't care if you're a plagiarist, a liar, a cheater, or a thief. They don't care if you're a good person. Larry Elder, they attack him for his race. Claudine Gay, they defend her because of her race. These people are evil. This is where we are today. So take a look at what they write in the AP. Revel in it, because we're winning. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 1 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. Elon Musk is roasting Star Wars. Why? Because they got a new Pakistani director who says it's about time they had a woman come forward to shape the story. Uh-huh. Yeah, here's the story from Bounding Into Comics. Upcoming Rey solo film director Charmaine Obaid Chinoy says, it's about time we had a woman come forward to shape the story of Star Wars. Star Wars sucks. I'm sorry. It's time you all accept it. Star Wars is bad. It is a convoluted, nonsensical fantasy sci-fi IP. Nothing makes sense. It's dumb. You know, the original Star Wars films were good. A good sci-fi adventure. And a lot of people claim that it just ripped off Dune anyway, but good. The prequels were a little bit silly, but we enjoyed them for what they were. Then they made the sequels, and those were just really bad. And since then, they've continually just made more and more garbage. The Mandalorian was okay, but still fairly garbage. I was watching, someone posted some clip about, like, Ahsoka and these other shows, and I'm like, dude, it's just awful. Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of the modern versions of or expansions of this IP is getting really, really awful. Look what they tried to do with Ghostbusters in 2016. Blech. They redeemed themselves quite a bit with the latest Ghostbusters, which kind of just forgets 2016 happened. And the new one coming out, we're a little bit excited for. But, you know, I think ultimately the big problem we have is that everything is a derivative work. We need some new stuff. Perhaps one of the reasons that Eric July's Ripaverse is doing so well and expanding so rapidly is that it's new. And all we're just seeing is this convoluted mess of everything. Look, don't get me wrong. I've never been the biggest Star Wars fan. I like Star Wars. Knights of the Old Republic. What an amazing game. And it was fun. Jedi Knight. Jedi Knight 2. These games were fantastic. Oh, Battlefront. Man, stuff was great. But now it's just a convoluted mess. And as I was going to say, don't get me wrong. Star Trek also has become a convoluted mess as well. They have no idea how to actually run these stories. What's fascinating about all of this is that when we talk about who's succeeding in the fiction, fantasy, sci-fi, in this medium, it's Japan. Anime and manga. And it's funny, you know, we got like Michael Malice on the show, and I mentioned manga. It's like, oh, and I'm like, the values that you get from, or that are delivered through like the classic, the top anime and manga makes American media look like trash. We talked about this with Eric July, how when you, like you someone says like, I want to watch or read One Piece. What do I do? Go to issue one. The whole thing, the continuity is all there. And of course, don't get me wrong. Okay, say that again. Naruto went basically off the rails. I had been watching and I've been reading the manga, the Scanlations every week. And for its entire run. I mean, not like literally the start of Naruto. I don't know when it started. But around like Shippuden, if you don't understand what I'm talking about, just bear with me and ignore the esoteric nature of it. Every week a new issue would come out, I'd read it. And then towards the end, all of a sudden, it went from like ninjas who were fighting to aliens. And I'm just like, eh. And so I'm like, okay, I'm kind of done with it. The point is, however, you can track that whole arc. You can read, and it's kind of easy to understand, even if it does get a little weird and convoluted. Dragon Ball was the same way. Fantasy, weird martial arts show, and then aliens got involved. But they actually did a pretty good job with Dragon Ball Z. The more important thing was, let's just say outright, all of our fantasy IP, all of our fiction IP is just convoluted messes over a long enough period of time. The issue right now is the values that you get from Japan's media versus American media is, well, it's shockingly offensive to me that we're at this point. I pop open the top manga, and what do I get? The big story is the characters. Characters who overcome.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. I love, there's a few different narrative arcs, tropes that exist in anime and manga. And let's talk about it. Okay, so here you have Rey from Star Wars. She closes out the film by just being massively powerful for some reason. Deeply unpopular, a Mary Sue character where people are like, for no reason, she just has all these powers. Then it turns out she is the Emperor, and the Emperor steals her body. Okay, I guess. Okay, so the Emperor is now a young woman. Let me slow down. At the end of the last film, okay, the major film, the Emperor is like, strike me down in anger and I will take your body. And it's like, huh? Apparently, in order to live forever, he possesses her if she kills him. And then she does. And so everyone leaves the theater like, is the Emperor her? Like, the Emperor took the young woman's body and now the guy is the lady? I would not be surprised if that's the route they go with it. But I think they're not going to do that. I just think they're just really stupid. Don't know what they're writing. But this is where we're currently at. The values that you get in this is like Captain Marvel, right? Women are just powerful, but the men are holding them back. Okay. How about the narrative that we get from the popular anime today and yesterday and the years before? This is why I'm like, you get all these people who rag on manga and anime, and they really just don't get it, don't understand it. Let me give you some examples. Full Metal Alchemist. When I hear people like Michael Malice, he's a friend, but he criticizes, he scoffs at it. Bro clearly has never even given it a chance. How close-minded of you, Michael. Because Fullmetal Alchemist is a story about a government conspiracy to sacrifice people to empower the wealthy, privileged elites. It's a fascinating story of the military being used to round up and sacrifice human beings. Now, there's two versions of the story. There's the manga version and then the extended anime version. Basically, what happens is, I could be getting this wrong, but they make a show. It's called Fullmetal Alchemist. Halfway through, the manga writer basically is just like, hiatus. And so the anime, the guys doing the cartoon version, not the comic version, are like, well, what do we do? So they made their version. In their story, there is a conspiracy to sacrifice humans for their alchemical research to extend their lives. I'm keeping it simple. In the manga version, it's basically the same thing. A despotic tyrant wants to sacrifice as many people as possible to empower himself. Okay. You basically have this great story of government conspiracy, murder, and it's fascinating. These two kids sacrifice body, like nearly kill themselves trying to resurrect their mom. It's an interesting concept. But you have other stories, most of the popular ones, where it's like you have Naruto, you have Black Clover, you have My Hero Academia. They're shows. Doesn't matter if you know what they are. They're about young men who are of limited talent, who work as hard as possible to build up their talent to actually succeed. To put it simply, in all of these stories, in many of these stories, you basically have someone who has no natural talent, who struggles, is mocked and belittled, but they think to themselves, I will work hard. And if I work hard, I can be the best. One of the reasons I absolutely hate Pokemon is that their main character, Ash Ketchum, is a perennial loser. It's just like, he just loses. And the story is like, but friendship is the real mission. And I'm like, no, that's trash. He's like, oh, I lost again. What a failure I am. I don't want to watch that garbage. You know, I love Black Clover. Black Clover. All right, let me give you. So basically, all these young people, it's like all of a sudden one day they get a magic book. I'm keeping it simple. And it allows them to use magic powers. Wow. Well, this one kid really wants to be a magic knight, but he does not get his book. Sorry. He cannot be the magic man. That's too bad. So what is the story about? The dude decides to train himself to the peak of human physical power. And then I really love in the early parts of the show, manga, he goes to fight in the arena. And I'm simplifying things. He does get an anti-magic book. He gets a sword, but he has no magic. He can't use magic. But he's so physically powerful, he defeats and wins in these battles with those who have magic. To put it quite simply, my friends, the story of this show is you may have no raw natural talent. There may be people born into privilege above you. You may be but a humble boy in rags. But if you work hard and train every day, you can be the best. And I'm like, that's the message you get from anime? No wonder young people, young dudes like this stuff and are abandoning Western media. Because the story of Captain Marvel and Rey is that they had the magic within them the whole time and had to do nothing to get it. But it's the men holding them down. Okay, no dude is trying to stop women. Like, no young boy is fantasizing about telling women they can't have a job. They don't care about that. But there are many, many young men who feel like they don't have the raw talent or ability, are lost or wayward, and don't know where to start. And then you get all these shows, My Hero Academia. In this show, you can be born with superpowers. That's right. And all these young people, they have superpowers. They get to go and they go to school and learn how to be superheroes. But unfortunately, our main character was born with no powers. And so, through hard work, he trains himself and eventually proves himself. And it's not the same as Black Clover, but a powerful hero says, you are of good character and I will bestow upon you the powers that I have that are passed down from person to person. Once again, you have the story of you got to be a good person. You got to work hard. Naruto, same thing. Delinquent kid, orphan, everybody made fun of him. He kind of sucked, didn't know what he was doing, but then figures out how to become good, becomes the best. I love those stories. I can't stand what they're doing in America, in the U.S., with Western media. It's all basically just this idea that you're entitled to power, that you should be, it's woke. That's what it is. Whereas probably you and I believe in meritocracy and responsibility. These shows are all about just having the gift and being the powerful one. But that's not reality. Basically, what they've done is they've started making superhero shows for the powerful, for the elite, and those born into privilege. And it's cringe. You take a look at Iron Man, for instance. What's his story? He's born into power and privilege, and he works for a family that manufactures weapons. He has this breakthrough understanding, realizing the destruction that his weapons bring, and decides, you know, he's going to try and help people, even though he's kind of a scummy dude. It's fascinating. Now, the Marvel Cinematic Universe version of Iron Man was really, really amazing. The idea for Iron Man was to create a character that you should just absolutely despise, a drunk, arrogant, military-industrial complex guy, but he's a hero. And there's a great character arc there. He's not a bad guy. He actually sacrifices his power and wealth to try and do something good. We like those stories. Batman, his parents are killed, so he trains to become the smartest, the fastest. Probably why he's one. Hey, I'll tell you this. My favorite superhero is Batman because he's a regular guy. Now, I don't mean regular as in he's not rich. Of course, he's super wealthy. My point is he doesn't have superpowers. He worked really hard to train himself, utilizing the power of human ingenuity and technology that he's able to purchase through his wealth. What Batman represents is someone who is willing to work hard, train hard, study hard, with all of the gifts that human technology can bestow upon him. He is lifted up by all of the people of the world and the technology they have to create the greatest detective with amazing technologies. Iron Man's cool like that too, but, you know, he doesn't have the same virtues. These are the stories that are inspiring to me. Instead, this is what we get. So Elon Musk roasts them. He says it's getting ridiculous, but I love how simply a tweet from Elon Musk can become a major story. Alex says, at some point, Disney shareholders need to file a class action lawsuit for breach of its fiduciary duty. After several years of repeating these same failures, I think it's reasonable to argue that Disney has officially decided to put its ideology ahead of its shareholders. Yeah. Disney's going to fail. This is why so many other outlets, so many other Ripperverse. This is why culture is succeeding in other areas. Disney is failing, and they're going to keep failing. So I say, fine. You know, it kind of bums me out, but I stopped watching all the Marvel stuff. I love the Marvel MCU. I thought Endgame was kind of meh. Infinity War was a masterpiece. Endgame was kind of just, remember this, remember that. And it's like, okay, yeah, we get it. And now they're doing all this goofy multiverse stuff, and I'm just over it. I didn't watch Loki. I'm not watching What If. I didn't watch Secret War. I don't care. I didn't go see the Marvels. It's just over because it's turned into cringe garbage. By all means, play that game. But here's the reality for you. You know, talk to anybody who's got kids, and you all with kids, you know this. I'm hanging out over the holidays, and, you know, I'm hanging out with this couple, and they've got two kids that are like 2 and 5 years old or whatever. And they're just like, dude, all this talk about gender neutral stuff and whatever, it's fake news. Because anybody who's raised children, is that a boy and a girl, they just know, like, boys do things and girls do things. They were telling us, like, for some reason, the little boy has just started smashing things. Like, no one ever told him to do it. And for some reason, the little girl started picking up dolls and nurturing them. For real. They were like, the little girl wants to carry on the dolls and baby them, and the little boy is just smashing things, and they're actually like, why are you doing that? I guess little boys are different. And this is where we're at. They're trying to create stories to tell little girls to smash, but little girls don't want to smash. They're trying to tell little boys to sit still and shut up, but little boys want to run around and smash. Break things. Calm down. Little girls don't want to break, don't want to fight, but they keep making movies about these kids, about these women who do. And I wonder, like, at a certain point, it just doesn't work. Okay. And that's what we're seeing with Disney's failures. It just doesn't work. And they're going to keep trying to do it anyway. I tell you this, my friends, it is all just so cringe. But whatever, we'll wrap this one up here. You get the point. I don't know, weird length of a segment. I did this yesterday, but it is what it is. Next segment is coming up at 6 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you all then.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We're all patiently awaiting the Epstein documents to get dropped, but this is not, my friends, the Epstein client list, and it is infuriating how many people on Twitter, X, keep saying hashtag Epstein client list. This is not that. And the reason why Jimmy Kimmel's name has a strong probability may likely appear in these documents is not because Jimmy Kimmel is friends with Epstein, flew on his plane or went to his island. He denies all of that. It's because these documents are related to a defamation lawsuit, which means there could be a ton of names completely unrelated to Epstein in this. But I suppose those of you who watch Timcast are aware of the reality of what we're about to experience. And the people on social media, on Twitter and X, who don't dive deeper, unfortunately, even those on the right side of news media are still being misinformed. And it is frustrating to no end. There's several bits of misinformation that are going around. I don't think it is intentionally wrong. I think people just don't read enough into this. First, the Epstein list was not delayed. We got this report that they were saying the names were going to be delayed until the 22nd due to Doe 107, who argues that because she lives in a conservative country, association with the Epstein list could be very dangerous. What does that mean, a conservative country? That's apparently not the United States, so who knows? Everyone's trying to speculate who this might be. But apparently that only means this one name may be delayed. One name. Because we currently have reporting from the Messenger citing the SDNY. The first names on the list are expected to be released today. They are not just releasing this huge list, but again, this is not the Epstein client list. Lord have mercy. Now, Jimmy Kimmel was mad at Aaron Rodgers after a comment about the release of names on Jeffrey Epstein's alleged associates. This is the media being a bunch of just disgusting. Oh, I hate it. I hate the media. I'm really frustrated right now. Let me just go through all this for you. Aaron Rodgers says something to the effect of Jimmy Kimmel must be worried. Jimmy Kimmel has really good reason to be worried because his name may be in these court documents. Despite the fact that, let's just say he has nothing to do with Epstein, because he says he doesn't. Despite that fact, it doesn't mean anything. Why? In the lawsuit, it's a defamation lawsuit. There are many people named, including victims, housekeepers, and third parties that are unrelated. It does reportedly contain associates and clients, as I mentioned, victims. Why? May Jimmy Kimmel be named in this? Because it could be something as simple as in the document outlining what happened. One of the victims, or I believe it was Virginia Giuffre suing Maxwell. So they could have written, the client was watching Jimmy Kimmel when the perpetrator walked in the room and said, "Ooh, I'm about to do something evil." Get it? Meaning Jimmy Kimmel gets named in this despite the fact that he has nothing to do with it. Now, to be fair, I think all of the people who are named in this who are currently remaining anonymous are aware they're in it. So I don't think Jimmy Kimmel will actually appear in it despite it being a possibility. That being said as well, there's a possibility the reason he doesn't know he's in this document, it's because he's not related to the case and his name is only peripheral. Like I said, there could be a story where it's like, I woke up in the morning and was watching a rerun of Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel, being a prominent comedian, was playing throughout the night. As I got up to leave, now I'll give you a better reason, to be completely honest, why Jimmy Kimmel may actually appear on this list. We have this tweet from MythInformed. Jimmy Kimmel and his BFF Adam Perry Lang, who was Jeffrey Epstein's personal chef for years, in this video. Now, let me just pull up, we'll get a bio on Adam Perry Lang, so we can all just, I want to make sure we get everything absolutely correct, right? Let's see, Sports Kita. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. You got the source. Who is Adam Perry Lang? Jimmy Kimmel's association with Jeffrey Epstein's private chef surfaces amid Aaron Rodgers' claim. Yes. So Jimmy may be freaking out. Let's say that Jimmy didn't do anything wrong. And okay, fine, whatever. You get in this. Someone writing in the document, I was in the basement as Adam Perry Lang was cooking for Jeffrey Epstein and on the phone with Jimmy Kimmel when Jeffrey Epstein said X, Y, and Z. It doesn't mean Jimmy did anything wrong. This is the reason why I'm going so heavily into Jimmy Kimmel on this one is because people keep claiming it's the client list and that the people named are going to be clients. Dude, Donald Trump is probably named in this. There's going to be something like, I had just watched Donald Trump speak at a rally when I turned the TV off and then looked to my side and you get the point. And this is what they're going to do. So many people on the anti-establishment side are claiming it's the client list over and over and over again that when Trump or whoever gets named in this, the media is going to report Donald Trump named in Epstein documents. And then all of these people who were misled by these internet warriors who kept saying client list over and over again are going to be contributing to the lie that Donald Trump was working with Epstein. In fact, I believe there was an FBI agent. Many people bring this up. At least I'm told. No, but this has been reported that Donald Trump was one of the only people to actually try and work against Epstein. Donald Trump kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago, apparently. Now, according to The Messenger, the first names are going to be released. The first 150 plus names expected to be released today. Yet they keep saying that. We'll see. The unsealing is expected today, said Ed Friedland, the district executive for the Southern District of New York. The documents were ordered unsealed by Judge Loretta Preska in a civil case brought against Ghislaine Maxwell by Virginia Giuffre. Names of Epstein and Maxwell's victims, associates, alleged co-conspirators are expected to be made public as part of the document dump. They could also include a bevy of bold-faced names whose ties to Epstein have long been known, including Bill Clinton and Prince Andrew. The defamation suit against Maxwell will settle in 2017, but the Miami Herald filed motions in the case to unseal the records that had been hidden from public view. A federal appeals court sided with the Herald, paving the way for a cache of documents in the case to be filed publicly. The other narrative that was coming out was that the list was being delayed. My understanding is this is not the case, and this is related only to one name. They're not going to be releasing every single name that was redacted in the documents. They have given individuals a chance to respond to the court. In this story, which is widely reported, Jane Doe has until January 22nd to prove she would be in danger if named. Who is Doe 107? Everyone is speculating. They're going to say the release of the long-awaited Epstein list of associates and high-profile friends has been thrown into chaos by a woman who claims she'll be in danger if named in her culturally conservative country. The entire list of 187 names was due to become public this week, but a filing by a woman in court papers has John Doe 107? I believe it's Jane Doe, right? Jane Doe or John Doe, either way. 107, blah, 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 appears to have stalled it. Preska ordered the release. We know this. She has won a last-minute reprieve. It remains unclear if the same delay now applies to the entire list. It does not. The United States District Court for the SDNY, which was yesterday advising that the list was imminent, is yet to provide an answer. And the woman's attorney is also in the dark as to whether everyone else will now enjoy the same extension. You know, I want to point out, I predicted this, okay? And I'm not trying to brag. It's not a bold prediction. I just said it is very likely that one of these people on the list is going to file and argue they're in danger. It's really simple. What if you're a taxi driver? No, seriously. You're a cab driver, and your name is John Smith, and you picked up someone from the airport in New York and drove them to an apartment somewhere in Manhattan. And you had a conversation with someone involved with Epstein. In the documents, as I've already pointed out, right? I gave numerous examples of how it could be like on TV. But let's give a more realistic example. John Smith drove me. My friend John Smith picked me up from the airport and drove me to the penthouse where I would be staying that night. That's it. The only time the person gets named. Doesn't know Epstein, doesn't know the victim, was or gave someone a ride and doesn't know much. that person's going to get named too. Now, as it pertains to housekeepers and stuff, I've made this point as well. Name them, shame them, lock them up. If you were a maid, if you were a hedge trimmer, if you mowed the lawn for Jeffrey Epstein on his private island, you should go to prison because you were cleaning up for him and facilitating. Now, I suppose, fine, maybe it's a little harsh. If all you did was mow the lawn and you had no idea what was going on, perhaps an argument to be made. But I'm not sure I'm going to buy it. But innocent until proven guilty, fine, so be it. As for the housekeepers, lock them up. Any housekeeper on Epstein's island knew what was going on. Why? Because they cleaned up. They were basically covering things up. So I don't care what your job was. Were you Jeffrey Epstein's personal chef? Lock them up. You facilitated the food consumption for what was going on with Epstein and Epstein Island. Let's jump to this. Adam Perry Lang, Epstein's personal chef. There's a lot of people, including Jimmy Kimmel, really hoping that doesn't come out, Rogers said about a list of 150 associates of Epstein. In the wake of his name dropping, netizens have dug out how Jeffrey Epstein's private chef, Adam Perry Lang, was once arrested from Jimmy Kimmel's beachside rental home in Hermosa, California, which happened in February 2019. According to LA Eater, they say Adam Perry Lang, who also was in the rest, blah, 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 was once the private chef of billionaire financier Jeffrey Epstein. In 2019, Lang went on record to say that he was a young chef whose role in Epstein's life was solely limited to meal prep. The chef further added that he was unaware of the depraved behavior of his previous employer. He also extended sympathy and admiration for the woman who has come forward. So this is in 2019. So when did this guy work for him? However, unsealed court documents obtained by the news outlet revealed that Adam Perry Lang often flew in Epstein's private jets to places including Florida, New Mexico, and the Virgin Islands, also known properties of the multimillionaire sex trafficking ring. As a result, speculations emerged the chef, too, was involved in the illegal business. Stop. Adam Perry Lang was involved in Epstein's illegal business. Okay, I gotta break this down for you, okay? If you are a shoe shiner for the mafia and they have clients come in and you clean the client's shoes, you're a part of their illegal business. Now, I'm not saying you committed any crimes or anything, but you're certainly a part of it. To make the argument, they say all known properties of a millionaire, blah, 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 blah. Speculations emerged the chef too was involved in the illegal business. Okay, he was. He was producing food, flying on the planes, working for Epstein as a component of the illegal sex trafficking business. Doesn't mean he knew about it. I just kind of feel like if you're flying on a plane, they call the Lolita Express. I have to wonder how you could be possibly so blind and stupid.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But sure, innocent until proven guilty. Meanwhile, Virginia Roberts Giuffre, one of Epstein's victims, accused Lang of being aware. That's interesting. On Tara Palmieri's podcast, Broken, Giuffre alleged that Lang often served food and drinks to the underage girls on Epstein's properties, making him a co-facilitator. The Epstein victim also stated that she and Palmieri wanted to deliver a letter to Lang at his Manhattan Beach home, seeking his help to locate Epstein's associates. However, upon arrival, they got information that Lang was not home and was rather staying at a Hermosa Beach property owned by Jimmy Kimmel. Not only that, but they figured out Jimmy Kimmel was also the co-owner of Lang's APL restaurant, as per LA Eater. This does not mean Jimmy Kimmel did anything wrong, but the likelihood that he appears in the documents is actually, let's just say, meritorious. There is a real reason Kimmel may appear in these documents. So when Jimmy Kimmel threatens to sue Aaron Rodgers, it's laughable. Apparently, in February 2019, Lang was taken into police custody at Kimmel's home after a 911 call was made saying a man inside the house was assaulting a woman with a firearm and making threats with explosives. However, Lang was later released and charges were dropped due to a lack of evidence. Very interesting. For the unaware, Epstein died by suicide, by hanging. I think it's really funny that they would actually try to report that. Dude, if you want to report it, you can say authorities say Epstein died by suicide. That's a fair statement. Authorities did say that. But come on. If you're going to say that, you can at least say authorities claim that Jeffrey Epstein died by suicide in a small room with a bedsheet tied around his neck, which he jumped off the top bunk with his legs folded to hang down to commit suicide. At the same time, the cameras stopped working. The guards fell asleep. Sure. We'll see if I believe that. New York Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers recently took a dig at Jimmy Kimmel during the Pat McAfee show when co-host AJ Hawk asked Rodgers about his thoughts regarding the much-anticipated release of the list of Jeffrey Epstein associates. Rodgers quipped that many people, including Jimmy Kimmel, were hoping that the list would never see the light of day. Meanwhile, Kimmel got the heat of Aaron Rodgers' comments about him and called him on an X, while simultaneously dismissing Rodgers' claims about his allegation. Like, okay, no, I'm going to say clearly Jimmy Kimmel is worried he's going to be on the list. Who would not be? Okay, everyone's worried that this list of names, not the client list, is going to include their information. And people have pointed out, hey, I bet Trump's on the list. Dear A-hole, he's spelled with two A's, for the record, I have not met, flown with, visited, or had any contact whatsoever with Epstein, nor will you find my name on any list other than the clearly phony nonsense that soft-brained wackos like yourself can't seem to distinguish from reality. It's interesting. Jimmy, you're not doing yourself any favors, buddy. He says, I've not met, flown with, visited, or had any contact whatsoever with Epstein. What does that mean? What does that mean? You can't play this game. I understand what Jimmy's trying to say. He's trying to unequivocally say, nothing to do with this. But bro, when you say things like this, it only makes you look more suspect. You've not met with? Okay. Does that mean you talked to him on the phone? He says, for the record, I've not met. Okay. Did you call him? Did someone facilitate messages between the two of you? Saying that doesn't do anything. Flown with. So what? You've never been on his plane. Did you work with him in any way? Visited. So, right. You didn't go to his island or his penthouse or any contact whatsoever. Fair point there. Phone calls out the window. I don't think Jimmy Kimmel was working with Epstein. That's my point. My point is, however, is it possible, based on the statement, which clears up nothing, that through Adam Perry Lang, he was working with him in some way? Let's say this. Jimmy Kimmel may be, according to some reports, co-owner in this restaurant with Adam Perry Lang, who was the private chef for Epstein, who apparently knew what was going on, says Virginia Giuffre, who likely says this in her court documents. Is it possible that Epstein helped finance this restaurant for which Jimmy Kimmel is a partner? Doesn't mean Jimmy Kimmel ever talked to the guy, but Jimmy Kimmel may have benefited, directly or indirectly. It may be as simple as this. Virginia Giuffre says, Adam Perry Lang, celebrity chef, was witness to all of these instances, blah, 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 blah. Perry Lang, of course, co-owns a restaurant with Jimmy Kimmel called APL, whatever, that was, you know, whatever related to Epstein. Or maybe it's not related to Epstein, but either way, a very easy path to Jimmy Kimmel being named on the list. Kimmel stated Rogers' reckless words endangered his family, which is a meaningless thing to me, considering when Jimmy Kimmel does the same thing to Aaron Rodgers and called him a whack packer. Maybe you're putting his family in danger, too. But Jimmy Kimmel doesn't care because he's a piece of trash. Jimmy Kimmel said that his own friend should not get hospital treatment. It is noteworthy that this is not the first time Aaron Rodgers has talked about the release of Epstein's list or associates of the Pat McAfee show earlier in February 2023. He asked the host whether they knew anything about the existing list. I love that Aaron Rodgers brings this stuff up. The following month on Jimmy Kimmel Live, the late night host called Rodgers a tinfoil hatter and mocked him, saying he needed to revisit the concussion protocol. You see, it's very strange. Aaron Rodgers points out a big breaking news story that we're all talking about, the Epstein list and the names that may get released. Okay, we're waiting for them. And Jimmy Kimmel insults him over it. And so Aaron Rodgers is like, man, Jimmy Kimmel must be worried about what's coming out on this list. I think so. I certainly think so. Now, Alan Dershowitz says a lot of people hung out with Epstein, claims document dump will exonerate him. I'm going to be completely fair and reasonable, my friends. Yeah, there's probably going to be people named on this list who did nothing wrong. And I don't want anyone to get dragged through the mud or threatened because of these documents. I don't know who Jane Doe 107 is. Maybe she's got good reason. Has nothing to do with it. Maybe she's evil. But here's the issue. Do not become the angry mob that condemns people based on public association. If someone met Jeffrey Epstein at a party, that doesn't mean anything. Okay? Right? There's a picture of Elon Musk with Ghislaine Maxwell. I am not going to claim Elon Musk did anything wrong because of that. And they try to. And Elon's like, we're taking a picture. And she walked up and stood in the picture with me. Okay, even if that wasn't true, even if Elon Musk saw Epstein and Maxwell at a party and walked up and said, hey, how do you do? And shook their hand and smiled for a photo. I'm not going to blame him. Now, if Musk was flying on their planes to private islands, sure, we got questions. Apparently, it's not the case. But that's the game they play, my friends. I remember Jordan Peterson took a picture with some fans who unfurled a Kekistani flag. If you don't know what it is, you can Google search the meme. Peterson didn't know what he was doing. He's like, I was a fan, want to take a picture. And then they're like, aha, look, he's posing with the flag. Therefore, get out of here, man. What I want to know is, who are the evil people who were paying for Epstein services, who were involved in the abuse of these underage women, who helped facilitate it? I am not interested in learning that Epstein went to a party at, you know, I don't know, someone's house. Because then people are going to be like, headline, boom, Donald Trump hosts Epstein at big party, documents reveal, or they're going to play this dirty game where they say Donald Trump named an Epstein list. Then the left will start screaming, this proves it. Donald Trump is this, that, or otherwise, because that is the dirty game they play. I am uninterested in that. Now, Alan Dershowitz says a lot of people knew him, but he didn't know what was going on. I wonder if the reason Dershowitz has been so friendly to the MAGA people is that he can see the writing on the wall. He knows where this is going. Epstein's network is going down and anybody involved is going with him. But Dershowitz will endear himself to the Trump side of things by defending Trump and maybe save his own skin. Or maybe he's telling the truth. He hung out with Epstein, flew on his plane because he had a plane, but he didn't know anything about what Epstein was doing. I've flown on private planes before. You know, I have no idea what these guys are doing. And like these two guys, you know, we'll charter a jet and they'll be like, here's the jet. And then what if it turns out some crazy crackpot owned that jet? I don't know, man. I get it. A charter is different from, like, you know, a guy inviting you on his jet. But I have ridden on a billionaire's jet before. And who knows? You know? Just a regular old billionaire. Not Epstein, though. Never had anything to do with any of that. And most people don't. And that's why I'm happy to see the list come out. And if that means Kimmel, Dershowitz, or whoever, their name's going to drop. It means we're going to have some questions for you. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 4 p.m. on the channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. You know, there's a lot of people who don't know that we here at TimCast produce music. In fact, 4 out of 5 songs we've released have charted on Billboard, despite the fact they seem to be, in almost every way, stopping us from doing so. Now, I say seem to be, but I don't know. There's a conspiracy. A lot of people say conspiracy, but I can tell you this. There is, it's all one big game. I think the whole thing's rigged. Ask Tom McDonald. I'll tell you, I watched his video. Tom McDonald, for those that aren't familiar, is a famous rapper who constantly drops hit after hit after hit. For some reason, he just doesn't make the charts. Sometimes he does. I'm not saying he doesn't. But there was one issue where he talked about how he put out an album and they claimed they weren't going to track his sales. They didn't believe him or something like that. Let's get to the news, ladies and gentlemen. We here at TimCast produce music. We have a label called Trash House Records. We recently announced that we'll be signing James O'Keefe. And James is super excited. We're going to be working with him. The songs are top level, full production, full high-end quality. The music videos are some of the highest quality you can make. And you don't have to like the songs. I'm not saying we make the greatest music ever. It's art. It's hard to judge. But we've put out 5 songs, 4 of which have charted. And pretty well, too. We reached like number 2 in sales. Well, we put out a song on December 15th called Together Again. It was a cover, a modern version as a spoof of Smokey Mike and the God King, also known as Jeremy Boring and Michael Knowles. You maybe know him. They wrote a song, and I'll tell you the story, and I'll tell you where we currently are. But first, so I don't bury the lead, we got the Billboard numbers, and something seemed wrong. This is the biggest release we've ever had. I believe on YouTube Music, we're looking at 8.8 million plays in our first week. Granted, it's not the same as your traditional music market because we're not on playlists. So when we get these big, when we release a song, it gets a ton of plays. It's typically because everybody wants to listen right away. It's more of a cultural issue. Whereas most other bands will get some degree of extended play because they're on playlists. We are not. So it is different. And I want to make sure I'll be very transparent about how this all works. This is our biggest release yet. And based on the numbers that we were looking at, I was like, I think we might actually hit the Hot 100, which is like the list of lists. And maybe not, I don't know, it's not super easy to just do. But at least maybe the Global 200, these are the big lists every week of the songs. At the very least, Together Again, we expected to hit multiple charts. Because it's like, I think it's pop, R&B, synth, alternative, or whatever, dance, a bunch of different genres, as well as sales. We reach number one on iTunes the first day the song comes out. I know how many sales we had. We beat everybody. We beat the Christmas music. We beat Mariah Carey that day. We shifted our sales to something called a storefront direct to customer. And we're told, yes, this is all tracked. You're good. As it turns out, we're being told, whoopsie. They don't actually track those numbers. Sorry, guys, you were for some reason misinformed. I wonder why they would do that. I wonder why it is this company would tell you this is the how we track sales. And then after everything's done, go, oh, yeah, whoops, sorry about that. Perhaps incompetence. Never attribute to malice that which can be easily explained by incompetence. And so we're going to have to go through our numbers and our expenses and figure out who's responsible for why we were told numerous times that everything we were doing is above board. Here's how it kind of feels. It feels like we know we are storming the gates and we ask you all to support us as we do. And then what happens is these guys are sitting behind the scenes going, dude, they have the influence and the power to hit the charts in significant ways. Why? Well, we've done it 4 out of 5 times. 4 out of 5. And I'll tell you, the only reason our fourth release did not chart is because we released it quietly, intentionally, for several reasons, political and also analytical. Basically, with the song Bright Eyes we put out, I realized not every song we do is going to be a single that we make a music video for and release. We made a very simple video, us playing in the new building, in our new studio, which is under construction. And then I released it and just kind of let it go. Didn't do any marketing at all. Because I wanted to see purely, we release it quietly, what's the reach? And I think 313,000 on YouTube, and I think Spotify is something like 60 or 70,000. That is organic, no marketing. When I talk about marketing, I'm also talking about me going on my shows where I have my influence and talking about it and asking. Like, that's what marketing is, but also paid marketing. This was the organic reach of a song if we do nothing. And it's pretty good. For a new artist to put out their fourth song, it's pretty good. It would have charted if we actually did marketing like we do for everything else, but we need a relative base point where it's like, here's what we can reach when we do no kind of distribution. Here's what we can reach when we actually actively promote. I think it's fairly obvious why Together Again is our biggest release ever. The Daily Wire being involved, shout out to Michael Knowles and Jeremy Boring. They also were talking about the song and saying you guys should support the music. With that extra push, 8.8 million views and a good amount of sales. I'm going to keep some of the information close to the chest for now because there may be some legal action pertaining to what's going on. I got news. I'm on vacation from Carter Banks, who's the music producer, and he says, here's our numbers. And I say, this is clearly a mistake. Number six, we hit number one on Friday on iTunes, and I know what our numbers were. So this must be a week lag or something. Maybe because of the holidays, we're going to get the information out in the next week or so. Sure enough, we get confirmation from the guys over at Billboard who it seems like they were working really hard to help us. And they're like, no, these are the numbers. That's it. And I'm just like, wait, hold on. We release Only Ever Wanted. Together Again has double. The sales of Only Ever Wanted, our first song. Only Ever Wanted was number two in sales. Only Ever Wanted charted across the board on a bunch of different charts, rock, hot rock, and alternative, etc. So you mean to tell me that our biggest release ever didn't chart? Something's not right. Something didn't get reported properly. Somebody's playing games. It may be that the trick that we endure was just to rip us off. That we're told by this company like, hey, use us. Don't worry. We'll make sure everything's reported properly. And what they're really, their real concern is not political. I don't know that it could be total incompetence. I think incompetence is likely at play here, but I don't know for sure. So we'll see. But anyway, I get these numbers and I'm like, something's not right. We hit number six. No, to be fair, number six, still really good. We released a song and we charted. We hit emerging artist number nine and number six. And we even get these, like this video right here is the Billboard top 10 digital song sales. I think we would have been number one. I think based on our numbers, we would have been the number one song for the week. We would have charted across the board, probably number one on a bunch of different charts. And I think it's possible we would have hit Hot 100 or the Global 200. And we didn't. Because apparently somewhere along the line, we were lied to. Now, many of you probably think it's political. It may be. I don't know. And, you know, I'm talking with the team as we're getting the information. Because it's now, you know, we got this information a week or so ago. And I was like, trying to figure, it's also the holiday, so I wasn't here. And I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And I'm telling the guys, like, look, if what we were told at first was, guys, it's Christmas. You're not going to beat Mariah Carey. You're not going to beat the classics. So this is where you ended up. And I'm like, well, you know, fair point. We are behind Mariah Carey. All I want from Christmas is you. I guess, you know, we weren't going to beat her. The only thing is we did on December 15th. When we initially launched the song, we said, hey, buy the song on iTunes and Amazon. And then we launched a storefront, shifting where the sales were going to, which apparently did not actually track sales, despite the fact it was confirmed to us by everybody that was going to be the case. And so I will say shame on us, but we shouldn't have to go through iTunes and Amazon. You know, part of the issue was a lot of people being like, I don't want to use those services. And we're like, you're right. We're going to use a separate service and host our own page so that we don't have to go through these big tech conglomerates. But that's the game, isn't it? If you do your sales through Apple and Amazon, you're good as gold, baby. But if you step outside their platforms, whoops, we didn't track your sales properly. That's the game, isn't it? So apparently some kind of change happened in the middle of the year and they just stopped tracking certain sales. And they claim it's like storefronts, you know, what I'm hearing right now, and it's a lot to go through. Storefronts, we're not just tracking those anymore. You know, it's a change we made. And then we ask, what about this storefront? Oh, well, of course we're tracking that storefront. Uh-huh. Sure. We got booted from Bandcamp for no reason after, what was it? I think it was, it might have been when we released Genocide, which charted. You see, I got to tell you, my friends, I think it'd be naive not to assume malfeasance and dirty play here. I don't know for sure. It may be pure incompetence. Fine. Either way, someone's responsible because we did a big marketing campaign for this one. And so did the Daily Wire. And if we got bad information, someone's got to be responsible for why we were misled, which negatively impacted the results we were going for in our marketing campaign. But I got to tell you, the one we've talked about how they desperately try to gatekeep and control the industry. Is there a possibility that We 4 to 5 songs charting. How many new artists can make that claim? How many record labels can make that claim? How many artists get investment from these labels and their songs don't make it? My friends, with your support buying our music, and we've got new stuff coming out. James O'Keefe is going to have a song, and we're storming the gates, baby. We learn from our mistakes, but we're shoring up our defenses. We will do everything to make sure that James O'Keefe, when he gets that song out, it's going to be ubiquitous. It's going to chart everywhere. And that it may not be the next release. We have 2 songs that are currently done. And one's the one with Ian doing the body transformation thing. I mean, literally, Ian was working out like crazy. And another song we may not do a music video for. But we're going to immediately start working on one of James O'Keefe's songs because he's a musician, singer, dancer, DJ. And we're going to start building culture and we're going to push back. I think there's a strong possibility that there are people who don't like what we do and they know it. And so all they have to do is throw a stick in the spokes of our bike and we go flipping over. But we're going to get back up. We're going to get in that bike and we're going to keep riding. A strong possibility that the reason we were assured over and over and over again, don't worry, all your numbers are being tracked properly, was because once the week was over, there was nothing we could do about it. And all they have to do is go, whoopsie. Now, however, that being said, I will not take this lying down. We are going to investigate how it is that we were misled and why we were misled, and we were being told that our sales numbers were being tracked properly. And let this be said, try as they might, or perhaps as incompetent as they may be. I don't know. We're going to figure this one out. Together Again still made it number six. I'll take it. We hit the top 10 in sales. And even though they discounted something like 80% of the sales, they still could not stop us. So we're coming for all of you. The gatekeepers, the elitists, the corrupt. We are going to keep building culture. And you can play these games with our numbers, but you cannot stop a tidal wave. So when they say, whoops, we didn't track your numbers, well, there are certain things there's nothing you can do about. And we will crash through that gate because you can't stop us. I'm really looking forward to James O'Keefe's song, Oh Baby. We're going to work on this song with James, and I hope it hits number one. I hope James O'Keefe drops this song and it is Rich Men North of Richmond times 10. Let's get it, baby. We've got the money. We've got the production. We've got the support. We've got the influence and the network, but they are just standing at those gates. It's fascinating, isn't it? That with everything we put forward, you know, I was really surprised because I'm like, with teaming up with Jeremy Boring and the Daily Wire crew, there's no way they can stop us. And they couldn't. I was right. Something happened. Perhaps they tried. Perhaps it was incompetence. Fair point. We still hit number six. Look at that. Together Again by Smokey Mike and the God King, covered by Timcast, is now a Billboard charting song. So try as they might. They ain't stopping us. Tom McDonald talks about this, man. He talked about the wacky games they play in the reporting. But let me just tell you, we'll adapt. We will adapt. And we're going to figure out the rules. Let me stress this. Final thoughts. As soon as we launch the song, we are in communication with these companies that do the tracking on it. And we are saying, here's what's happening. And they're like, okay, we got it. We got it. And we're like, we want to make sure we're doing everything right. And they said, yeah, we got it. When we released Only Ever Wanted, they did not track our YouTube plays. Total BS. And we still smashed onto the charts. I firmly believe that, look, I think it's every time we put out a song, there's been some weird thing where they're like, oh, whoopsie. They keep doing it. I shouldn't say they keep doing it. It's different people. But it keeps happening for some reason. The first time I'm like, and I'll chalk it up to an experience. Then we start getting consultation from these big label guys. Then all of a sudden it's like, huh, some weird thing happened with that one. Yeah. I think it's a combination of incompetence and dirty play. We'll see. But I'm not taking this one sitting down because this is war. This is culture war. And we're winning. Number six, I'll take it. Number nine, emerging artists. We're on those charts every time, despite the mistakes they're making. Look, some of these songs that are on these charts, they get like a million. We got substantially more than that. Okay. I want to clarify. We got 8.8 million plays. Many of them are paid marketing because we're actually marketing the song. A combination of different kinds of marketing. And those don't count towards Billboard. But when you buy the song, and a large portion of the streams, yes, do count. They count these things in different ways. Now, I know we're not going to win a battle of streams. The reason is a lot of these songs get released and they get put on the default playlists. So if you turn the app on and press play, the song plays even if you never heard of the artist. That's placement. We can't compete. But with your help, we have a large enough network of sales to absolutely decimate the mainstream industry. And we'll win. So we're going to get another song ready, which should be soon. This one is called Eyes of Advice. And look, I don't know if these songs are, they're not pop songs. You know what I mean? It's just music we made. And if you like it, you like it. And if you don't, you don't. But all that really matters is we say this, buy our music. Okay. You can go on iTunes. You can buy any one of our songs. Support our work, because we're building culture. Green Day recently said they're not part of a MAGA agenda, and they got roasted for it. And the media was like all whinging conservatives. That song, American Idiot, was the first time Green Day hit the Hot 100. And it was a song that was overtly political. That's the name of the game. The game is not whether or not you think the song is the best song in the world. The game is, do you have the influence to command? These big industries for the longest time have controlled influence. They'll take an artist, they'll prop them up, put them front and center, main stage, on the playlists, on the radio, because they have that influence. And then people are like, I've heard that song before. Well, why did you hear that song? Placement. We don't have that luxury. We're the outsiders. We have the luxury of the influence of our network. They play the same game. Taylor Swift has a song where she makes fun of right-wingers and people who are critical of LGBT stuff. It's called, You Need to Calm Down or whatever is the name of the song. Obvious political. And she says, why are you so mad when you could be glad? A political organization. They use this stuff to get sales. We don't even do that. But you know what? Maybe we should. All right. I absolutely said for this song, let's storm the gates. Let's play this game. You know what I think it is? Part of it may be. Together Again was written by Jeremy Boring and Michael Knowles. I think it might have been Jeremy Boring. I don't know who gets writing credit. Because the mainstream music industry rejected Jeremy Boring's attempt to play a classic at one time. So he wrote this mocking him. Could you imagine if this song really did shatter the records and break in onto the charts in a huge way? So it made the charts. I'll take it. But it should have been higher. I don't think that any of these people working in the industry would be happy to see a song like this succeed. So we're not done yet. We'll see how it goes. The new song's coming out soon. Thank you all for your support. And I'll see you all at 8 p.m. over at youtube.com/TimCastIRL for the next show.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.